All right. Phyllis has a question. Or comments. Comments would be great, too.
I was thinking you said that when you're in a good meditation, you lose yourself in it.
If I said good, let me qualify that. It's a meditation. It feels good.
Well, that happens to me when I read a book. And I get really involved in it.
So
I lose myself.
Yeah. So here's the difference. It's a great distinction. And Shells was actually asking me about this earlier. What's the difference between dissociation and attachment was her essentially her question. And the answer is that in direct contact, we are fully involved with that object that we're contacting. In a book, we aren't. So in full contact, I'm fully present in all aspects to what's going on in this moment. So a book does this lovely thing of taking us to another place and another time that we engage with. And it's delightful and wonderful. But it's not about being present in this moment with full contact. Yeah. Yeah, and there's no judgment there. They're wonderful, lovely experiences. They're just different.
It still leads to the same result in many ways that a meditation does.
Well, I don't think it's going to lead to enlightenment.
I'm sorry?
I said I don't think it would lead to enlightenment.
Oh.
In that, if we're defining enlightenment as clear seeing in every moment, clear seeing is direct contact with what's right here. And the story making is a whole other thing, and I love stories too. I had this experience in California. You know, I've been working hard on clear seeing. I've been really working hard on non-attachment. And California is this other place, right? So there's this tennis weekend. We're at this little tennis center. We stayed there for 6 weeks. And there's a weekend where all these people come in from San Diego. And there's this woman who says, she sits down and she goes, "So, what's your story?" Well, I'm an introvert, first of all, so like in that kind of a situation, I'm just like in total panic mode, right? And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "You know, what's your story?" And I thought, "Why? I work so hard to not have any stories." So, like, I'm really panicking now. She said, "Where are you from?" "Oh, that's easy. I grew up in Illinois." "Oh, really?" Yeah. It was hard. I had no idea where to go with this because I really like this whole story-making thing. This is what happens and all the time in meditation, right? I'm asleep, I'm breath, and oh, I forgot to, and then I go off on that, and I go, "Oh, yeah, right, I'm supposed to be meditating," and then I go, breath, and I go, "Oh, yeah, but thought is part of it. I'm just going to watch my thought." Well, no, I'm going downstream with those thoughts. I'm not letting them go by. I'm not watching the thoughts. I am fully engaged with them. And so we learn that in our sitting. We learn, like, when is it that I'm going downstream with the debris, and when is it that I'm just watching the debris? And we get pretty clear on that. Doesn't mean we stop going downstream with the debris, but we know when we're doing it. New meditators will often say to me, "Well, this is what I did in my meditation. It's all thinking." Okay, well, that's good. You had a nice thinking session, but let's keep working on meditating. And we'll get you there. We'll get you to see the difference between thinking and seeing your thoughts, if we're open to it.
I was hoping when you were at the beginning listing the three reasons why not to take notes or... Okay, I'm sorry, I'm putting words in your mouth.
Tell me what it is you wanted.
I was hoping that you were going to say one of the reasons, or at least this is what works for me. When I'm concentrating on taking notes, then I do miss what's being said. It's part of why I, and some people are going to jump on this, why I really believe, and I've heard this by scientific people, there really is no such thing as multitasking.
Yeah.
Because you're either writing or you're listening.
Yeah.
And it can be quickly between them. But I mean, I really was hoping you were going to say something like that.
Notice the suffering, though. Well, let me just use this for a second, because this is what happens, right? And so these are these distinctions between like aversion and pushing away and pulling in. Like we want something to happen and it doesn't happen. Now there's just a minute of unsatisfactoriness. And it's a, I think it's a wonderful thing to say, you know, and I didn't think to say it. For me, I didn't think to say it because the biggest message I want to leave you with is it's not about our thinking. It's about how are we experiencing this? Really, in your bodies, how are you experiencing this right now?
Okay.
I'll be the courier.
Thank you.
And then there and there.
Mike.
Yeah, you've got the blue. The blue shirt guy who I keep thinking is Jerry, but I know you're not, so.
So somebody says, what's for dinner?
Mm-hmm.
And a complex comes up. Oh, my gosh, when I was a kid,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mother said, you better like this meal because I worked hard on this.
Yeah.
So there's that complex.
Sure.
So what you're saying is, I'm watching the debris from my mother saying, let's say, and I'm not becoming engaged with it. I'm watching it float down the river. So is that kind of where you're coming from?
Well, yes and no. You're also noticing the way in which you do become engaged with it and the way in which you identify with it, which is as just as important as seeing it as an object, right? Because where liberation comes in is where we're able to see the way in which we're engaging with that object in ways that are benefiting us or not benefiting us. And so it's my identification with my mother, it's my identification with her rules, and somehow I'm supposed to live by her rules, whether I agreed with them or not, but that keeps us bound.
But you see the complex, but you're not going to get engaged with it. Is that kind of what's happening?
I see both things. I'm not going to get engaged with it. In other words, I'm going to say, that's interesting. I'm going to de-identify. If we're saying the same thing there, I'm going to de-identify. Yeah. And I can do that either by just seeing it as a debris floating by, or I can see the way in which I actually do identify with it, and I can touch that with mindfulness and begin to dissolve it.
So you're working through that complex. So you don't get sucked into the current. You step back and look at it and say, well, here I am again. It exploded. But I'm going to let it shrink.
Yeah, and if I'm going to be in a different relationship with it, I'm going to really notice the way in which my body's responding as that complex is coming up.
Thanks.
Yeah. Let me get, I think we had somebody over here, and then we'll go to you. Catherine, and then, I forgot your name. Drew?
Emily,
right.
I have a question and then a comment. The first bit was that when I taught at the University of Stress and Health, I was teaching the various forms of meditation, and I was originally trained a Maharishi, you know, I received the mantra, et cetera, received a diagnosis of lymphoma and was training with Deepak Chopra, and I was taught sound therapy, or sound meditation,
right.
And he was emphatic that I use that for that, and then I did go into a remission. I mean, it was quite the miracle. Uh-huh. This was in the 90s. So I've always, you know, since then, religiously, of course, practiced. But recently, having read Thich Nhat Hanh's work and now struggling with like a labrum tear in my hip, et cetera, from snowboarding, like a crazy person.
Nice.
I'm using Thich Nhat Hanh's walking meditation, but I wanted to say thank you so much because what happened just now, because I've not been walking for quite some time, just doing a lot of acupuncture, was this, I was hearing this voice. I was like, you know, okay, I know, you know, piriformis, and I'm doing all this intellectual stuff, and then suddenly I quieted my mind, and it came forward that, Catherine, you need to learn to walk again.
Yeah.
You need to learn to walk again. So it was very helpful to just roll through the feet again and just concentrate on the feet versus
Lovely.
The injury. So I wanted to thank you.
Thank you, yeah. And please do not, I would hate for anybody to hear that I'm diminishing any other forms of training. They're lovely forms. This is just the predecessor to modern mindfulness work, and so that's why I chose to work with this tonight.
So I have a question then, because when I work with patients, like, you know, I go from Jon Kabat-Zinn to Herbert Benson's work at Harvard, you know, who also mm-hmm. was doing
right.
the Maharishi studies, et cetera, is that when I'm working with people, I present them four or five different alternatives for quieting their mind or getting into a place where they're looking at pain or what have you, using either the mantra or, you know, a sound or versus Zen meditation. So do you have thoughts on that, or do you always go just this one track?
No. Great question. So we're looking at So I'm going to use this model of shamatha vipassana, steadying the mind and insight. Whatever helps us to steady the mind so that we can do the work of insight is essential work. And so some people are really going to have difficulty with, especially with watching the mind, especially initially. And so if we can develop some kind of steadiness, whatever the form, whether we're doing candle staring or a lot of my meditation is spent listening to sound, and just hearing whatever sounds are there, near and far, low and high, continuous, not continuous, and which is just like doing a breathing meditation or a walking meditation. But I think mantras can be helpful. I think as long as the final goal is how do we develop insight, how do we develop this wisdom about being in a wise relationship with our world, internally and externally. So if it doesn't take you there, and in fact, this is the reason why some of the brain changes that they're showing in different, they're seeing them just with mindfulness and not with other forms of meditation. And my guess about that is because the mind is pretty engaged in mindfulness meditation. It isn't about just quieting the mind. It's about being present with the mind and being present with the mind in ways that we can have a new relationship with this moment. So. And